And I am Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie.
And we're never going to tell you which one did which.
That's right. But I can tell you this. The 747 is in a museum on the moon.
Yeah, right. Right next to the McDonald's.
Yep.
And we are joined by Lieutenant Commander John Filipowicz.
Good morning.
Good morning. The United States Coast Guard.
The Coast Guard is having a tremendous presence here today. I was out there on Boeing Centennial Plaza looking at the aircraft that were brought in, and two of them came from an area not far from family that we have, Elizabeth City, North Carolina, but we also saw one from Cape Cod, a beautiful, what is it, a UHHH-60?
HHHH.
It's a MH-60.
Jayhawk, right.
Oh, you're not allowed to call it a Black Hawk?
Black Hawk is an army helicopter, right. Army variant.
Right.
Okay. Well, you can't call it a Black Hawk. The thing
it's
is,
orange.
It's,
yeah.
No, it's not orange. It's yellow.
We brought the big yellow helicopter this week.
Okay. And don't forget, the important part about a yellow helicopter is it goes faster than the rest of them.
Yes, right. The black slows them down. Yeah.
That's right.
Let's talk about that machine. That's a big helicopter.
It is a big helicopter. So we brought our Jayhawk from Cape Cod. It took us about 8 hours to get here. It is our standard search and rescue configuration that we fly. We cover everything from the Canadian border all the way down to New York City from our station there in Cape Cod.
Can you make that hop without refueling?
We can, yes. We can fly for about 6 hours.
Okay.
On a full load of gas. We advertise we can fly 300 miles offshore. Hover for 30 minutes trying to pick somebody up, and then 300 miles back.
So 30 minutes doesn't sound like a whole lot of time to get people off a boat.
It is not, but that's why we train all the time, so we can do it quickly.
The problem is they don't train. They're like, you want me to do what?
Yeah, when we show up on scene and someone's kind of confused, we tend to put the rescue swimmer down. He can get down there, run the situation, calm people down. The biggest deal is just trying to get people to calm their nerves down.
Right.
Most people don't want to jump off their boat, even when their boat's sinking.
Now, when you hover for a rescue, how high do you try and maintain? 100 feet, 30 feet?
It depends on the boat. If we're hovering just over the water, someone's in the water, no boat around, 35 to 50 feet
okay. Is
normal, depending on the wave height. If we're hovering a boat, depends on how high their mast is.
Yeah. Well, for me, that's even scarier than the sinking boat, is the part where I got to hang in that, what do they call those things, cow collars, and you're going to winch me up 50, 60 feet?
Yeah, so we try to put you in the basket. You're sitting on your bottom. Most people don't like hanging from our sling like you're talking about.
Right.
So we try and use the basket. It doesn't always work, but that's our go-to device. Most of the time, if you've already been in the water, you're happy to get out of the water. It doesn't matter how you're getting out.
Yeah, okay.
I was going to say, if
you put those fears aside.
If my boat has sunk and I'm in the water and you guys are up there, I don't care how you get me up, just get me up.
I'd probably be scared enough to jump straight up, right? Free fall up.
I was talking to the rescue swimmer on board the aircraft yesterday, and he and I got to talking about some of the equipment that you carry on board. And I was impressed that not only can you have the crew on board, but you have all of this equipment. Can you tell us what equipment that they have on board for rescue purposes?
Right, our standard configuration that we fly around with, we have the basket. It's the standard one everybody sees on TV. We also carry a litter. If someone's injured, needs to lie flat, needs to be strapped in, that's folded in half, kind of tucked in the corner. We carry a dewatering pump. So half of the time, we don't have to hoist you up. We can just give you a pump, let you dewater your boat, and continue on your merry way.
Right, providing the boat's seaworthy.
Right, you got it. Our rescue swimmers are EMT qualified, so we carry a full medical kit in the back of the helicopter. And then we carry two slings with us, one to put the swimmer down and the second one for the swimmer to bring a person up with them.
Well, a two-person lift, yeah.
You got it.
What about blankets? I mean, you've got to have a lot of blankets on board.
We do. We carry a couple wool blankets. We also carry a hypothermic sleeping bag.
So if someone's really bad, shove them in there.
You got it.
Nice.
What exactly is a hypothermic sleeping bag?
It's connected to the engine exhaust. Just toast some of
that. That might get a little too warm. it's just a thin sleeping bag that's relatively loose, so we can get someone into it easily in the back of the helicopter. Big helicopter, still not a lot of room once you get someone laying on the deck back there. So it zips all the way down. We can get him into it, get him zipped up.
And his own body heat does the rest.
You got it.
How many people can you lift? I mean, how many people can you carry?
The record is 26 people in the back of that helicopter.
Are you kidding?
Yeah.
26 people?
That's not normal, but it happened. They threw out all the gear, everything they didn't need.
Yeah.
And it was a cruise ship that was having issues. Wow. And they put 26 people in the back.
Holy mackerel.
The pilot must have been shaking his head when he arrived on scene. What do you mean 26 people? They never told me that.
That's a long time sitting in a hover trying to hoist that many people up.
Yeah.
Good grief. I can't imagine what the pilot had to do to hold this thing because it's doing nothing but getting heavier and heavier.
We were very lucky. That helicopter is very powerful, very robust. Sikorsky did a great job building it.
Yeah, it's conservatively rated.
Yes.
Yeah, well, that's good, too, because as you can find out, there's always a circumstance where sometimes you need to push the performance limits. It worked out well for those 26, didn't it?
It did.
Well, have you had to ever do that? Say, we need to leave someone behind, we're out of reserve time or anything like that, and we're going to have another one coming right behind us?
I haven't personally done it yet, but it happens all the time in the Coast Guard.
Okay.
All of our swimmers are trained to go up in either helicopter. So, for example, if something was going on below Long Island and I went down there and I ran out of gas, so it was time for me to go. I hit Bingo Fuel. 65 could come from Atlantic City, New Jersey, and come out and pick up the rest of the survivors with my rescue swimmer. They're trained to come up on either helicopter.
Okay. And I'm pretty sure.
And you leave the rescue swimmer behind just to calm everybody, if nothing else.
We do. There are instances where we'll actually get all the survivors on board and leave the swimmer there because there's no room. So we'd rather leave the swimmer in the water. He's got a raft. He's got all his survivor gear to get picked up by another asset, whether it's a boat or a helicopter, and take the survivors with us.
Now, he's also got the training to survive in that kind of condition, too.
Yes, sir.
And I'm sure that when you're over the rescue site, if you need a backup, you're already on the horn, and they're already coming at you.
If we're going more than 100 miles offshore, there's always a second aircraft. It may not be a helicopter, maybe a fixed-wing asset, but there's always a second aircraft coming right behind us if we're going more than 100 miles offshore.
You have a C-130 in this group, too. Do you drop kick rafts out the back of that thing in tough times?
They can drop all kinds of stuff out of the C-130. All of our fixed-wing assets, the C-130, the HC-144 Ocean Sentry, which is parked over here as well, painted nice and blue today, as well as our new C-27J, which isn't here. They can drop flares, life rafts, emergency kits, emergency rations, drop radios.
Little umbrella drinks, you know, because we're on the cruise.
Wait a minute. That's only for the Miami area.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's not in the Arctic kit. That's the Caribbean kit.
Yeah, the Arctic kit comes with
inflatable grizzly bears, so you feel like you're at home.
Well, it also comes with dipping sauce for the crab legs.
There you go.
You got it.
It's got to be interesting being a pilot on one of these aircraft. When the weather is bad, how difficult is it to maintain a hover?
The weather itself isn't a big deal. The gusting wind is what makes it the most difficult to maintain a hover. The helicopter is heavy enough to be very stable, but still light enough to be agile. We kind of hit the sweet spot with a 60 in stability and agility. The gusting wind is the only thing that really makes it difficult on us. High winds are fine if they're steady. If it's blowing 50, 60 knots solid, it's just like you're flying 50, 60 knots straight forward, right? Even though you're sitting
right,
still
even
on the
though
ground.
You're looking at the guy under you.
Right.
What about spray off the waves?
We make a lot of rotor wash. Not such a big deal during the day. Really big deal at night on night vision goggles. All the lights inside the helicopter and the bottom helicopter reflect off that spray and create what we call the milk bowl. We can't see. There's no more horizon. We can't see outside that rotor wash anymore.
Wow. So you're really paying close attention to your instrumentation and also to what your spotter is telling you as
right.
well.
Right. The winch operator is your spotter, right?
You got it. So when we're hovering over the water, we cannot see what we're hoisting to as the pilot, the guy flying. So we're relying on the guy in the back to tell us, hey, we need to go forward 5 feet, right 5 feet. We're just looking at the bubbles on the water to make those changes.
Wow.
Can you feel the difference when you pick up the rescue swimmer and, say, a rescuee? Can you feel the difference when the helicopter picks up the weight?
Only if it's a very heavy person. In the 60, again, big, heavy helicopter, it's hard to notice the difference. The 65, very different story. You can actually see the helicopter tilt a little bit, you know, when they pick them up.
Interesting.
If we're picking up two people, a rescue swimmer, or sometime, we can feel it in the 60.
More power.
I never thought about the fact that you're loading it unevenly. That never occurred to me.
It's off balance.
If you notice, when we sit on the ramp, we always sit left wing down because we have those big fuel tanks out on the left-hand side. So the helicopter's always sitting to the left. People tell us we have flat tires all the time.
There has to have been a mission where the weather is absolutely horrendous, and there was plenty of warning, and yet you guys get a call, and you have to go. Really? Seriously? You decided to go out in your boat today?
All the time. We do something called storm track. So if there's a big storm coming up the Atlantic, we'll actually send our fixed wing asset, the 144, out to fly a couple of tracks offshore, making broadcasts. Let me know, hey, the storm's coming. We suggest you go in. We can't force you to go in, but we suggest you go take shelter. inevitably we're going to go out and have to check out one of those guys.
There's always one.
We told you so. That's the paper they give them that says we told you so.
I'm surprised because the rescue swimmer's got to jump down in there, and he's got to be thinking on the way down, why didn't you listen to the warnings, you dummy?
Oh, those swimmers love doing their job. They will take any excuse to go get in the water. Even when we don't need to use them, they're trying to finagle a way to get in the water. they love doing their job.
The one that I was talking to yesterday, this guy was absolutely stark raving enthusiastic about it. He loves his job.
The colder the better, huh?
He just, anytime I can get out of that aircraft, man, I'm there. I want to do it.
That is 100% true. But they have a very intense mindset. I mean, these guys are getting left out of a helicopter, detached, no longer connected. We can't get them back if they go too far away in 20, 30-foot seas, 50, 60-knot winds at night.
Yeah, you know? No thanks.
You got to be a little bit
nuts,
a little bit brave.
Yeah.
I was going to say that man is very brave, but... He also said it's very satisfying when you pull somebody out of the brink of disaster.
Oh, yeah. Do you work like on a scramble basis? In other words, you got like 5 minutes from call to airborne kind of thing?
We do. We have a crew ready 24/7, 365, both the fixed wing and the rudder wing assets. We have 30 minutes from the time that the SAR alarm goes off to be airborne. It takes about 15 minutes to get the helicopter started and get airborne. So that other 15 minutes is weather planning, fuel planning, trying to get extra fuel in the airplane, stuff like that.
Do you have anybody go out there and start the helicopter up and get all the avionics warmed up before you actually get on board?
We usually do not. If it's something that requires a lot of extra planning, we'll send the co-pilot out, have them get the APU going, again, get the avionics up, just like you talk about. But most of the time, we all go out there brief before getting the helicopter, so we all have a solid plan, know exactly what's going to happen before we fly out into the really bad weather, and then climb in together.
Now, how many times have you had to throw the solid plan out the window when you get there? And it's
as soon as you take off.
Yeah.
As soon as you take off, the plan goes out the window.
Yeah. So you get a lot of various training, and when that plan fails and you switch to plan B, that's when all the training and everything kicks in. You find a solution to the problem.
The Coast Guard is very good at standardization. So anytime we change plans, everybody knows exactly how the next evolution is going to go. As soon as you say we're going to do a basket hoist, everybody knows in their head exactly how it's going to go. Katrina was a great example. We had crews coming from everywhere in the country, met in Alabama. You'd have a pilot from one air station, a co-pilot from a second air station, a flight mechanismer who have never met each other before. They get in and they have exactly the same terminology. The procedure is exactly the same, and they went out and performed that mission flawlessly.
A lot of flying down there. A lot of long hours.
Oh, that had to have been a mess. What about corrosion on the aircraft? Do you have is there a program on site to go and clean the helicopter off once you get out over the salt water?
We fly in the absolute worst environment possible, hovering in salt water all day. We spend a lot of time, a lot of maintenance in corrosion control. The helicopter engines get washed after every single flight. And the airframe gets washed at the end of every single day. Then we have calendar corrosion control. They go through, anti-corrosion in every hinge, every joint they can find. And we still end up doing a lot of, replacing of components that have corrosion in them.
How do you train for not getting seasick in turbulence? You just got to get out there and do it?
I think most pilots, by the time they get to a flying or helicopter, they've been flying enough that they're over the air sickness part of it. We take passengers a different story. We have to tell them what to do.
Lean over side. Well, we need to go. This is Digital Dave. We've been talking with Lieutenant Commander John Filipowicz of the United States Coast Guard.
They're celebrating their 100th anniversary of Coast Guard Aviation. I'm Fast Eddie. This is EAA Radio. Yep.